Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello, and welcome to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, and today's guest is a composer and performer, and I want to play just a small selection from one of his songs. It's called New Beginning, and this is by the performer artist named Richard Carr. So tune in and listen for just a few seconds as we relax into this day. Was the music of Richard Carr, and that's off of a new CD he has out called Soul Rekindle. Hello, Richard, are you with us today?
Yes, I am.
Hey, welcome to Alive to Thrive. It's awesome having
Thank you
on. I love your music, as you know, and you have been prolific in your lifetime composing music, not only for more than 14 CDs, but sharing a new piece of music every single day for the last 2 years. That's probably a world's record.
I don't know if it's a world record or not, but it's just what I'm doing.
Well, I don't know of anyone else that's ever done that. And you define your music style as music for the new age and tracks for soul, mind, and body. Let's talk about that a little bit. What does that mean to you, music for the new age?
Well, the genre, for lack of a better term, and one that most people understand, is new age music. And so when I was in grad school, they had me writing all kinds of strange stuff. And I had a major professor go, "What, do you want to write music, or what are you writing music for?" I said, "I'm not writing music for now. I'm writing for the 21st century." And I basically stopped writing there. When I was in grad school, I stopped writing. And a few years later, 8 years later, I started writing again. And it was a new sense of sound to me. It affects me just as much as it might affect other people. Music for the soul, mind, and body, soundtracks for the soul, mind, and body. It's a relaxing style. I often will tell people, "I'm going on a journey. You can come with me if you like, or you can go on your own, and we'll be back when I'm done." And that pretty much kind of sums it up. In fact, the new album is subtitled Music to Get Lost In.
Music to get lost in, and that's so true. And your music has been used by not only spiritual practitioners, but people that just want to bring some peace and serenity into their own life. And this day and age, we're usually so busy, and people don't take time to relax. I always encourage my coaching clients and women that I mentor and coach to take an hour in the morning, or even just a half hour, to listen to beautiful music and to get centered and to get calm, because that's all about the philosophy that this show promotes, which is being alive, but also thriving. And thriving is when you're clear in the head and you're clear from chaos and drama. When did your music first start coming to you and channeling through you to be expressed in the world? At what age did you start?
I started creating music at probably 7th or 8th grade, so 12, 13 years old.
And
it was just always there.
It was always there. You were even born?
I imagine it was. You know, my parents, my dad used to say that, you know, he always listened to classical music, especially Tchaikovsky. And so my love for Tchaikovsky is probably prenatal roots. But, you know, I'm heavily rooted into the classical, especially the Russian and the French impressionistic classical realms of music. And so it's always been there as far as I know.
And so you've heard about the Mozart effect, I'm sure. What are your thoughts about exposing music at young ages, learning
I think it's a phenomenal idea. I mean, without music, can you imagine your life without music?
No.
Probably not, you know, and most people cannot, but they don't really think of it. What do you hear with the little kids? What do they get? They get some of these sing-song stuff, or they get Barney's music, which is okay. It does serve a purpose, but there's deeper music that kids could be exposed to at earlier ages where it affects them sooner rather than later.
And I think it has proven through science that it affects brain chemistry. Certainly as you're older, it affects the serotonin levels, but probably as your brain is developing, it does increase the neural pathways for learning. And, you know, one of the things I really appreciate about my Catholic upbringing was, you know, having done really emphasized music. I took piano lessons from the nuns at the convent and was given a piano when I was in fourth grade. But I don't think I have the gift. I don't think I'm born with it, like you said. I didn't have the discipline to practice every day. It was one thing. But I did have the appreciation for music at a young age. And I think that never left me. And I, you know, I'm so grateful to my mother for making some big sacrifice to allow me to take piano lessons at a young age and instilling in me that appreciation for music. And then, you know, having needed classes, music education and music theory, that's being done away with these days in schools. What are your thoughts about that, about music education getting cut in schools?
Well, as you know, I actually am an artist in residence and co-director of a conservatory here in St. Louis. And what we do is we supplement what's happening in the school systems. Fortunately, we're surrounded by two school districts that are put a heavy emphasis on the fine arts. But many of the school districts around the country are doing away with it, or they're localizing it into and putting it into one school, like the magnet schools in St. Louis did many years ago. You know, you had your Academy for Visual and Performing Arts. Boom. That was it. All the rest of the kids were just kind of left to their own devices. And that's, you know, budgetary cuts. It's whether you have teachers who are willing to spend the time and and devote their passion to kids, which is what a teacher is. They have to have that passion for kids, because they certainly don't get compensated enough to do the job that they do. And so when they start cutting budgets, first thing goes, it's not athletics, it's the fine arts programs, music, drama, you know, that's, you know, the stuff that's vital for people's creative processes to explore and to develop.
Yeah. And I do want to do a shout out for a wonderful nonprofit that's making a huge difference nationally, and it's the VH1 Citizens Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to restoring instrumental music education in the public schools. And they people can get involved there. Their website, VH1SaveTheMusic.org. They have worked with over 1,800 public schools and given over $49 million in musical instruments to schools. So that's a way that people can get involved there, and they're connected on social media, on Facebook, et cetera, and Twitter, VH1, Save the Music. But what do you think parents can do? It's back to school time. I saw little kids waiting for the buses yesterday. So what role can parents play, and just the community at large? How can we make our values known to school officials and those that are funding school budgets?
Well, it's not just the parents. You know, the parents are the ground source. I mean, they're right up front, and they have to be able to encourage their kids and sincerely encourage them. I don't see, you know, where I'm at, we're in a more affluent part of the city, and these kids are going every day. They have something. They are so busy that they don't have time to be kids, much less foster a love for almost anything. The kids are playing, you know, like my nieces play soccer, and they're burnt out. One of them's completely burnt out, and she's in eighth grade. Completely burnt out on sports because that's all she's been doing. And she's got a great voice, and she's starting to sing. So fostering those thoughts, processes. My parents, I had a little Magnus air organ, electronic air organ, and I was playing on it from age 3 or 4 on. And my parents said, you know, maybe there's something here. Take notice of your kids and recognize, and then take it to the schools and say, hey, we have this. We need to do this. Unfortunately, some of the economic situations don't allow parents to do private lessons. And so where are they going to get it? It's either going to be in the schools or they're not going to get it at all. And, you know, and it's really sad, but the school system says, well, we can't afford it either. So it becomes an economic thing.
Tell a little bit about how your parents encouraged your music. You were, you know, sitting down at the piano at a young age, and were you composing at that age, do you think? Were you just playing without music?
No, I was probably reading, you know, the little sheet music that they had. You know, you had the numbers and you had the keys, and, you know, there was chords on the side. And so I pretty much was doing that, but, you know, they tell you what letter it is and you match it up with the keyboard. And they took me over to one of the nuns. You know, I grew up in the Catholic school system, and they took me over to one of the nuns, and one first nun said, no, I don't take anybody before third grade. Here I was in first grade. The other nun said, well, let's see. And then for the next 3 years, I was under the tutelage of that teacher. And when she got transferred, I ended up at a local Catholic college, actually, and their music education program. And the audition was through the person she was going to, another nun was going to assign me a student teacher. And she decided that she wanted to have me for herself. So for the next 7 years, or 6, 7 years, I had the same teacher. That probably was more beneficial to me than anything else, because you develop a working relationship. Many of my students right now, I've been teaching at the conservatory for almost 5 years. Many of my students are 2, 3, 4 years working with me. And so you develop that relationship. You know, it's a relationship that some of these, you know, these kids, if they're in split homes, which a lot of kids are, you know, they're not getting support from one side or the other. You know, they can practice at dad's house, but they can't practice at mom's house because there's nothing there to practice. It's we do what we can, and we have to encourage it when we can. It's a sad state of affairs, but it's also the whole social media, or not media, but the whole social environment you know, oh, it's nice to have kids, and when people hear the piano and they hear the music, oh, it's great, but they don't put any value in the development process, and that's where the downfall is. It's awareness of you have to develop it. It might be innately in there, but you got to develop it.
So you spend most of your time performing and composing, but you do teach, and I did want to touch on that a little bit because you only have a few slots available to take additional students. But you're the artist in residence and co-director of Midwest Music Academy, Music Conservatory, Ballin, and you've been teaching there since 2008. But what do you think sets your style apart from other piano teachers? What do you do that's slightly different, that's your trademark?
That's easy. I don't have a background in education. Therefore, I'm coming from and I don't call myself a teacher per se. I'm more a guide because the kids come to me or the young adults too. I have adults as well as kids. And they come to me once a week for a half hour, maybe 45 minutes. And who's doing the teaching? They are doing the teaching themselves. All I'm doing is setting them down a path to work. And every week they come in and I see how they're progressing along. So my first lesson, these kids know that they are the teacher. And they're also responsible for grading themselves week on practice. It's easier to do it that way, in my mind. But I come at it from a performer standpoint. And so I am looking at the performance side. My technique is pretty good. But I have kids, some of the older kids who've developed the teachers, all they do is bang on technique. And then it's not the expression part of the music. And that's without music, without expression, music is just notes. And how many times have you gone to a concert or performance and the music was basically perfect, except you came away empty because you didn't have that emotional feeling. So I harp on it, I says, where is the music inside you? Okay, we got the notes now. Now put you into the music. And sets me apart.
That's what I was missing it was very detached. It was very, you know, just learned this by memory or by rote, and it wasn't coming from the soul place. And I think that if you teach in that manner, getting in touch with your passion and your soul, and you're able to bring that out in people, that sets you apart as a guide, and I like that because the music is in all of us. I mean, it's like creativity exists in all of us, but many, many people suppress it, ignore it, cover it up, don't acknowledge it. And I mean, I was one of the people. Like, it was only in the last couple of years that I've expressed myself through making jewelry or painting, and I just so often. We're brought up in the society that, you know, it's like go to school, get a job, go to work. You know, it becomes this. We become, you know, sort of robots in an automatic society where we lose touch with our hearts and our souls. And that's ironically one of your CD mini titles, "When Soul and Heart Collide," and that reached the New Age Voice Top 100. Actually, got all the way up to number 4. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You've been in the New Age community producing all the various CDs and producing them on your own. Talk about a couple of your more favorite ones. I know American Coyote also was in the top 100. What are some of your favorite CDs there? Try to pick a favorite.
Probably my favorite is Coyote. An American Coyote. It really was. I tell people to listen to it with the liner notes at least once, and read the liner notes that go with it, because it kind of tells the tale of someone with the legendary Quixote, you know, the literary figure Quixote's eyes, living in today's world. And, you know, my mother says it's autobiographical. And, you know, and maybe in a way it is, but there's, you could feel the passion in the music. Most of the albums, you know, Fogland was my second album and still my bestseller. Maybe because it's been around long enough. When Soul and Heart Collide was the fourth album, Quixote in between the two, and people bought Quixote thinking they were going to get more Fogland, and it was a whole different side of me that they hadn't seen or heard. And Soul and Heart Collide was a combination of the two. That's the way I looked, that's the way I described them at that time. And Soul and Heart Collide was that Fogland and Quixote blending together and giving you a whole picture of where my my palette of musical expression is. My later albums, I find that, you know, this new album, I'm really excited about Soul Rekindled. It came together rather quickly, like the early albums did. And we're really excited about it. There are cuts there that are just like, they literally blend from one to the next towards the end. And so that's that. My synth albums, my ambient or, you know, albums, there's Journey to Light. I really like Journey to Light. There's a piece there called Light Music, which is just really, it's just bright. You know, someone said, I just create the intention for it was more light. And so, and that's what it is. It just keeps coming at you and it gets brighter and brighter. So it's, mm-hmm. Each album, someone says, well, what's your favorite album? I always say it's the one I'm working on.
Yeah, because that's what you're most in. And I'm sure that your Christmas CDs have been very popular. You have several of them with the holidays coming up. I do want to mention those titles, Christmas Fireside and Christmas Tide, as well as Christmas Sprinkle. And those are gorgeous, and I know you always perform a lot of public concerts in November and December around the country, you want to make sure people know that they can contact you through your website, richardcarr.com, to request a performance in your community. Richard travels all over the country extensively, performing at a variety of locations. The Christmas CDs are very special because Christmas is a time of reflection and candles and piano music. And, you know, I find it wonderful to put on a CD while I'm wrapping my presents and while I'm decorating the tree, and you get really tired of the typical Christmas songs that are on the radio, you know, ad nauseum starting in October. And to have the kind of piano music that you create, Richard, is just a refreshing break from, you know, just a little rock, you know, that's over many times on the radio. You want to talk a little bit about your Christmas music there, your Christmas CDs?
Well, there are a total of four Christmas albums, and I seek out, one, I don't like to pay for my music to use it, so therefore you won't see White Christmas, you won't see, you know, the Christmas song, you know, Chestnuts Are Roasting on the Open Fire, or Christmas Time Is Here, which is one of my favorite Christmas songs from the Charlie Brown Christmas song, or special. But you won't see any of those things at this time. I won't say ever, but at this time you won't see that. So you're going to hear more traditional songs. You're going to hear songs that, one, in this country you probably never heard, because we're seeking, you know, Christmas Time was subtitled Christmas from Around the World. There's a Venezuelan Christmas carol. There is a Latvian Christmas carol. There's Germany, and, you know, there's, so I find these carols that are really cool sounding songs. I mean, one of my favorites is, I'm going to chew the Polish up again, but Lulezia Jezu Nil, which is basically Lullaby Baby Jesus. But it is such a beautiful carol, and we don't hear these songs. So you could actually put it on in July or June, and you might not even know it's a Christmas carol, except for maybe one or two familiar ones pop up every once in a while. So, and I do include original music in those albums. Each one has at least two to four original Christmas-themed music at the same time.
Fantastic. And so they can get your music off your website by a physical CD that they can give as a present, or your music is also in SoundCloud, is that correct? And listen to your music
actually,
on SoundCloud?
Right now, the only thing on SoundCloud is the Year of Music Project. But if they wanted to download the music, you can get it through any one of the normal vendors, but you can also get it from my website as a download. So you can purchase my music as a download as you would at iTunes or wherever else. And it's cheaper to do it through me than it is through any of those other places. But we have physical CDs, and we also have download versions available through the website.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break, station identification and a public service announcement. We'll be right back. We're talking to Richard Carr, who's a performer, an artist, composer. He's an amazing artist and has created many, many CDs to share with the world. We'll be right back. You're listening to Alive to Thrive, and my name is Brent Frayer, your host today. Be right back.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com. and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take a deep breath in and let go of the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you hit that piñata into your neighbor's yard. Let it go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Just a few notes off of a song called Forgiveness. And our guest today, Richard Carr, is the composer of that music, as many other songs. We've been talking with him about the creative process and want to get more into that. But tell us a little bit about that particular piece called Forgiveness and what inspired you to write it.
Well, Writing it is I'm not comfortable using the word writing anymore when it comes to my creative process.
Expressing.
Expressing it. It's the whole album is kind of a glimpse into my personal journey after Hurricane Katrina, and which I basically had time to look at myself and see how could we improve my life situation. And there was when some people come to that effect, there's a lot of stuff to do. And one of the big things is forgiving, and not just forgiving me or forgiving other people, but forgiving myself for things that have happened, to realize that, yes, things may have happened, but I don't have to hang on to them. And forgiveness is part of that, you know, that letting go of things. And so it has kind of a spatial quality. The piece itself has a spatial quality where you hear a couple of notes and it's allowed to dissipate before the next set of notes come in.
So it illustrates the letting go process.
Yeah, absolutely. That whole process was a very painful experience for myself, because you have to face yourself and say, okay, you know, and oftentimes, people will, yes, we've done things, but we don't necessarily want to acknowledge them they're there. You know, and they're just kind of tucked into the closet, so to speak. So I did a serious airing out of my closet, my personal closet.
Well, because when we heal emotional pain, let's talk about Katrina. There's not that many people. I don't think I've ever had someone on my program that went through Katrina. So you were living in New Orleans at the time. And the infamous question, you know, why did you stay and without, you know, wanting to leave? Did you have performances settled, or, you know, you were attached?
Why did I stay? I was asked that question many times, and I actually did a very extensive piece about the whole Katrina experience called My Neighbors, which I'm not sure where it is nowadays. It might actually be part of it is available on my website. But Katrina, why did I stay? Well, dumb. I was just plain dumb. That's the best way to do it. I didn't even realize the storm was coming. I knew there was a storm out in the Gulf, but I really wasn't paying attention to it. And I never thought to leave, honestly. Because we had had, I've been in New Orleans for 10 years. We had had several close, where a storm was coming, and it never did come. You know, it always veered one way or another, and we might got extra rain. And that's basically what we figured was going to happen. And if the levee had not broken with that big storm surge, that's what would have happened. But unfortunately, the levee broke. And the water came into the city, and I had, in my neighborhood, in my block, we had five feet of water, which was just enough water to come right underneath the floorboards of half my home. The other half of the home had water because it was a little bit lower.
How did you get out? I mean, your music, your keyboards and everything, you had to leave everything behind, or what happened?
I broke, there was an apartment upstairs, not knowing how far the water is going to go or anything else. I broke into the apartment upstairs. I moved keyboards, computer, all my CD stock, and a few valuable things of my roommates up into the apartment. The other apartment, my neighbor, the guy who had the upstairs apartment, he was a musician. And, at that time, you did things, as long as there was some sort of rationale behind it, people would say, okay. And I just left him a note saying, I had to put a lock on the door, I had to break into the door. I had to put a hasp and a lock on it. And I told them where to find the combination to the lock, which was in a mutual storage space that we had. And so, and when I came back 6 weeks later, he had already moved all his stuff out. And he left it behind and said, no, he says, glad I could have been of help. He says, is there anything you want to leave behind? Go ahead. I'll be back in a few weeks and I'll clear the rest of the place out. I never have seen him since. You know, we had to pass those notes.
Wow.
But, and then, you know, 6 weeks later, I came down and went back and collected, took a van and loaded up the keyboards, the CD stock, some clothes, and came back to St. Louis. And eventually we went down and moved it. Yes, the cat
and
was
how
still
did
there.
How did your cat survive 6 weeks while you were gone?
Well, there was at least one person, my next door neighbor, who wasn't going anywhere. And so I gave him a key to the place to feed the cat, because I had food and I had plenty of fresh water. There's one thing you do learn, if this hurricane's coming, you're going to, I had probably 15, 20 gallons of fresh water. So she had water, she had food, and the litter box was good. And so, but he forgot the key one day, so he came into a window in the back of the house. It was open, and he forgot to close the window. So the cat was outside underneath the house when I came back the first time. And she wouldn't come out. So I opened, there was an opening in the storage space, and I left the door to the storage space open so she could get out of from underneath the house and into the regular part of the house. And when I came back a few weeks later, no power or anything, and I walk in the door and meow, 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 meow. I was like, don't you dare leave me again. And she's been attached to me ever since.
So having that experience of what you witnessed and saw, human suffering and the displacement of so many people, how did that affect your music? Do you think your music became more introspective and melancholy? Or how did the music heal you and heal others that went through that?
Well, the music as it had all my life kept me sane. My life in New Orleans was, I was a performer, a full-time performer. I played 6-7 nights a week. I came back to St. Louis and it wasn't there. I mean, in this town, regular gigs are very hard to come by. And so I was dealing with the fact that my whole way of life was changed. And the only thing I had was the music. So I just started recording, anytime I sat down to play, the tape deck went on. And so we had, the music did change a little bit. It got a little darker for a while, and then eventually it got brighter. And for probably 6-8 months, I would do my neighbors live. And I realized as I was doing that actually I was just forcing myself to stay in that position, into that space, sinking into it. And so now every once in a while I'll do it. The further away from New Orleans you get, the easier it is to do a piece about Katrina. You get closer to New Orleans, they all experience it. We don't need to hear it. We know we went through our own story. And that's true. Everyone has their own story. I have a good friend from high school who was down in New Orleans recording people's stories in a personal, in an audio file form where he has all these stories. He sat down there for 2 months after Katrina recording people's stories. Real fascinating project. It's, walking through there, right after Katrina, you saw piles of stuff. People's lives piled up on the street waiting to be picked up. You know, and my father, my parents were harping on me to get a job and to, you know, move on with life. And my dad went down with me to the first trip down. And we drove around a little bit. And I says, have you seen enough? He goes, yeah. And that was the last word he said for 200 miles. Because, you know, all the pictures you see and everything, but when, you know, yeah, we all saw the pictures. We saw a guy sitting on a roof with a dog, you know, waving. He'd been on the roof for 28 hours. I recognized the dog when I saw him, saw my friend later, because I did know that guy. And so it has even more of a personal touch when you see people you know. And so it's, you know, it's not an experience I want to repeat. It's not one I wish on anyone else, but it has affected me personally on my outlook on things and everything else.
What's your advice to anyone overcoming tragedy, loss, learning about detachment? I mean, whether it's a car accident in my case, or a terminal illness, or a disaster by God or nature, as a hurricane is, what is your words of wisdom to someone who's in the midst of experiencing a crisis in their life? How can they get out of it to the other side?
Oh, gosh. What a loaded question. You know, I was fortunate to fall into a group of people who were willing to help me walk through it. Know that, I guess one of the biggest things, know is that you don't have to do it alone. There are people out there who will help you if you seek them out. And sometimes they may just simply ask you, do you need help? And don't be proud, too proud to say, no, I don't. Be proud enough to, Don't be proud enough to deny people the help, people's help. The biggest lesson I learned from Katrina was to learn how to say thank you to people wanting to help me. Because I was always that guy who would, someone needs something. I'm still that way. People call me and they say, I need your help. Can you do this for me? And I'll help them if I can. And I was always the one to help. And a lady at the Unity Village, I was at a conference at the Unity Village in Lee Summit. And she said, how you doing? Because obviously they were paying for everything. They gifted me the whole conference, the administrators of the conference, so including lodging. So I walk into the lodge and said, how you doing? I said, you know, I'm just not used to people giving me things. And people say, here, you need this. And it's like, well, I know people who need it more than I do. And she said, you know that joy that you get when you give to people? I says, yeah. She says, you're denying people their joy. They want to help and they want to give it to you. Not to somebody else, they want to give it to you. So she says, learn how to say thank you and accept their gifts.
That was the biggest
lesson I got.
Yeah, that's a big point. I mean, I was crushed when my aunt and my child wouldn't accept the gift. She was a giver. She'd give. She was always there to help others. But she had a hard time accepting gifts herself. And I think it is important to be able to accept help that you ask for it, or to accept it to come along, and that there will be help along the way. I actually wrote a chapter in a book called 7 Points of Impact, and the chapter is called Help is on the Way. And it has a double entendre. The one meaning is help is coming, the cavalry is coming, but it also means that help literally is on your way, on the journey. And in our lives, as we experience different things, people show up to help us. So recently, you've had a vehicle stolen, and most people would probably panic, you know, go into depression or something, but, you know, someone you helped out, and you just keep moving forward. And that forward momentum that is so important in our lives, that no matter what happens, we can keep moving forward. Patrice Billings was just a speaker this week at an event, and she's one of my clients, and she said, you know, even if you fall flat on your face, you're still moving forward. and you know, it's true, and I think sometimes people get so stuck. Like you said, even performing that song, My Neighbors, would bring you right back to that place. And I decided, you know, you don't need to stay stuck in that old story. It's just a part of your story, a part of your journey. And so now you're at a point of your life where there is your joy. You enjoy cooking and teaching, guiding children and adults in musical journeys and exploration through piano lessons with you. But you're also performing a lot of various concerts, and we'll be talking about where you're performing so people can check you out at one of upcoming concerts. But you're working on a new CD called Becoming Aware. Tell us what that project is all about.
I'm sorry, you kind of broke up on which project we're talking about.
The CD called Becoming Aware, that your new project. What's that?
Well, Becoming Aware was actually most of the music actually was done right before the album Journey to Light, as part of a trilogy, and it's been just kind of sitting on the shelf, waiting for the right time to release it completely. And what we're going to do, we're in the process of getting the artwork done now. The music is mastered and everything's done as far as that goes. And we're going to release it only via the internet right now. And so it'll be available for download probably by the end of September is what we're looking at now. And it's, like I said, it's part of a trilogy, and there's a third album that has yet to be finished called The Clearing. And it literally is the whole process that I've been going through, becoming aware of lots of things in my life that I just kind of ignored or just didn't plain know were there. As kind of my spiritual awakening journey, I guess, and then the journey to light, moving towards that ultimate purpose in my life, I guess, and then the clearing is really where, although we never completely arrive, we get to a point where we are arriving into where we're at, and where we're comfortable with who, and where I'm comfortable with who I am. And I can sit at home by myself or with the cat, and I'm comfortable with the company, even if the cat's not here. You know, it is, she does her own thing most of the time anyway. But it is that personal journey. And so my music is, you know, it is me. I often tell people in the performance that I'm not here for you, I'm here for me, and you just get to benefit from it. You know, you get to hear, I laugh a lot in concert. You know, I tour with some guys, some other artists from Enlightened Piano Radio, and many of them are all really serious, and I'm the comic relief half the time, although the music is still very intense. And the music pulls you in. And if we don't get tears from a few people, then, you know, maybe the concert wasn't as successful as we thought.
So you will be playing, coming up in Minneapolis and Omaha and throughout the Midwest, actually, in the next coming months. Indianapolis on the 22nd. Here in the St. Louis area on the 24th at the Midwest Music Conservatory, and then Corning, Iowa, and Omaha, Nebraska. So all these places are on your website, and people can follow Richard and on Facebook as well, and there'll be holiday concerts. But talk a little bit about this concert tour you're doing, several cities, with Donovan. Tell us about Donovan. This is the Enlightened Radio.
Donovan is the creator of Enlightened Piano Radio. He's the owner, and that's the
website,
enlightenedpiano.com. Enlightenedpiano.com is the website, and it's all solo piano music. We have currently about 45 artists on the station, and we're touring. Two of these concerts are with all of them are with Donovan, but the other artists we have here in St. Louis, we'll have a gentleman from Hannibal, Missouri named Tad Fisella will join us. In Corning and in Indianapolis, we will have Joseph Nolisti, who is, simply put, a monster at the piano. He has just graduated with a master's degree in piano performance from Indiana University. And he's, you know, we all have different style approaches. The music is different as we are individuals, you know, as different as we are individually. And yet the music is uplifting. It will touch your heart. It'll grab your heartstrings and pluck them. It's just a really, we do kind of like a song circle where we play two songs and then someone else sits down and we rotate. Mm-hmm. And it's a very cool way where we're all very personable. We talk about the music. We share music with Donovan and I when we're doing concerts together. We invite the audience members to give us a success, musical inspiration, we call it, and where they can give a suggestion, say, okay, we had a suggestion of Clown on Fire was a musical suggestion, and we create music for the suggestion. Clowns on Fire was rather strange piece, but it was the one that sticks in my brain the most because it was the first one on our tour last summer, and it's the first one that I got. It was Clowns on Fire. It was, but we create music. One was Heaven. What's your musical experience of Heaven? So.
I love that.
So, you know, we've had roller coasters. We've had, you know, two pirate ships fighting in the sea. Yeah, I tell them, be creative, you know. Someone said Rhapsody in Blue, which they were looking for the Gershwin Rhapsody in Blue. Well, they got something in blue, but it wasn't quite the Gershwin version that they were hoping for.
So that poster on your Facebook page, and also you can go to Donovan Johnson, D-O-N-O-V-A-N Johnson, johnson.net. There is also some YouTube clips from some past concerts, and it might be coming to a city near you in the Midwest. If not, you can request that it comes to a city near you. I mean, Richard's probably performed in, 30 or 40 states in the total U.S., many of the Unity churches, Unitarian Center for Spiritual Living, but can also do solo concerts or best concerts or your favorite nonprofit, or even perform with a flute player like Bradford Smith with your CDs, Richard, with Bradford. Was that the only CD you did in collaboration with someone else?
That was the only one, but there is one that's in the current developmental stage. There's two albums, one with another Native American flute player, and then there's one that we're calling it Chilled Jazz with a good friend of mine, a guitar player from Nashville. So there's some variety. We're exploring working with other people more. You can't always be by yourself.
That's right. And it's great to have have the variety. So sometimes people want something a little softer for their home listening or something with other people. Now, the your music, we have just a few minutes left, and I want to make sure people know about this. For 2 years, every day, Richard has composed a new piece of music, has shared that generously, beyond generous, with people internationally, all over the world, as well as in the U.S. If you go to his website, richardcarr.com, you can subscribe to get a piece of music each day where you listen and meditate. What's that been like, Richard? I mean, there must have been days that you weren't feeling well or not feeling down in your health or something. I mean, how have you kept up through the past years?
Well, it's one of those strange things that, you know, I just do it. You know, I sit down and, like this morning yet, I don't have any music up for today yet. I will in about a half hour after we're done here with this conversation. But I sit down and I can create, because my process is a very stream of conscious type of playing and creating, I can sit down and just start to play. And it comes out in whole pieces. I don't have to work a melody line. I don't have to do this. It just comes out. So I can sit down, and within a half hour, I can have 3 to 5 pieces. And then we post it up. And so I have those ability to have those down days quite easily, you know, where I don't feel like my day is just too busy for me to sit down to piano or at the keyboards. But there are days when I have that time and I can create more. I rarely create more than an hour at a time. So then
okay.
We post the music up and we get it ready to go. And then when the date comes on, we make it public. So there
okay.
are times, there have been times where I'd have 2 weeks of music up front. And all I have
okay.
to do is go online to post it, you know, to make it public.
Okay. Okay. Well, it's been a huge gift, and I, you know, people want to still sign up. They can do that. It may not always continue in that way, but it is there now. And the last thing we should talk about is, you know, your new CD, Soul Rekindled, which is available and has so many wonderful songs. Now, was this a re-release of something you had produced earlier?
No. This is all we were. The original idea was to release an album, two albums at once, one of music that was recorded prior to Katrina, and then to release an album of music that was recorded after Katrina, because I never really stopped recording. I would go down to New Orleans, and we'd spend, you know, a couple sessions, couple days in the studio recording. So I had all this music. Well, it turned out to be a really difficult choice when we had about 75 pieces of music to choose from pre-Katrina and over 100 post-Katrina. So what we decided to do was just to take music that was recorded in 3 sessions in 2012. So this is all new music recorded in February and one day in May in New Orleans. Or actually, they were recorded both at the Midwest Music Conservatory. So it's the first
yeah.
time away from the setting that we've been recording in for the last 13 years. We've been recording at Tulane University since 1998. And so this was the first, actually the second album, because we did Christmas Cradle, we did here at the conservatory as well. So
okay.
that's about, that's what it is. So it's all new. And if you want the music right away, you need to order it as a download right now, because we are currently, due to the
okay.
recent or previously mentioned disappearance of my
uh-huh.
vehicle, all
okay.
the stock is gone.
we're out of time, Richard, and I'm sorry, but we've had a wonderful interview, and we're going to close with a piece from called Idaho. Thank you so much, and check out Richard
okay.
Carr at richardcarr.com.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.